B3. Number 5B.
Now, can you see what we have been doing with this page 52? Was first to get conceptually clear about what is involved with the Christ translation and the Christ idea. Actually, what we must do then is when we have first a clear concept of these three categories that are here presented, that naturally then we should sit back and ponder what that means. And only through that pondering and praying about it and contemplating it and loving it and having a sense of gratitude for it, of being blessed that we know about it, with a sense of anticipating really the promise of an understanding of this translation. That quality within ourselves is that which makes the letter to become the spirit, that it gathers a spiritual sense. And in doing that over and over, lovingly, not with a sense, can I understand it? This is difficult to understand. Why should I have to understand it? You know, that's a resistance already. That's not the loving acceptance of the divine idea. So if we ponder that, then naturally, little by little, these sevenfold flows of the Christ order become more natural to us and become really a tonality, become really a background music that stays with us. And that, at that point, really, then this Christ idea becomes substance, and that Christ idea begins to operate in our lives. We can go back to this page 52 in another way. See, we just have to see that we have here three categories. There are the divine standpoint, then there is the human standpoint if we accept it, and the human standpoint if we resist it. There are subcategories, really, of that Christ translation. If they are of the same category, we naturally can then compare them. We can therefore also flow horizontally through this chart here, and so as to take in the three categories at once, so that they are not three separate categories to contemplate, but if we go through it horizontally, we begin to combine them, to blend them into one presentation. And going through horizontally, naturally, these three standpoints must make sense. Let's see if we take principle, and if we see in the Christ that principle is that potential power. From the standpoint of God, that principle says, I'm the only power, and I'm the potential power, and I'm the all power. And therefore, we can say from the human standpoint, therefore, I accept that as my authority. And I come to the divine authority, I accept that power as my only authority. Can you see? And therefore, in the last column, we can see that I accept that because I say to myself, it's no use to resist it because principle is imperative and apodictical. I have no chance to go against principle. And you see, in this way, you take in principle already from three different standpoints and cover, so to say, not only the attitude of God, but also our attitude towards that principle. And we can again sit back and just ponder that and so to say, analyze our attitude and say, Do I accept that? Am I really inwardly at that point where I begin to see, yes, principle is the potential power, the all-sufficient power of God and of being, and I accept willingly and lovingly and hopefully that as my authority, because I have no other chance anyway whatsoever, because principle is anyway apodictical and imperative. Do I accept that? You see, when in pondering, you see, as a method of pondering, it's not always just to ponder a subject as it would be out there. Say, out there is something that is called the Christ translation. But pondering means also first to see that and then to take it in and say, what is in my heart about it? What is my motive in the deepest corner of my heart? Do I actually honestly accept that? Do I honestly accept that? And do I honestly see that I have no other way to go? These would be the two standpoints of the human standpoint. So in pondering, which is really a kind of prayer, where we interrogate our deepest feelings in our heart, in our motive, where we see that everything is motive. If my motive is not right, if I don't go along with the divine inwardly, well, then I build a gulf between God and me, and then that flow of the Christ idea, the flow of demonstration is no more uninterrupted, is no more harmoniously. I have a gulf in between and no bridge, so to say, in order to bridge that gulf. And so I must always ponder the divine, even if it is the highest law which we have in the chart, still there must always be that within ourselves which says, is that my prayer? Is that what I really want? Is that what I really desire? Or I'm just fooling myself with a theory, with a highfalutin theorem, or is that deep-seated in my heart? That's then where the struggle begins. That's where what prayer means, that you really can sit down with yourself, and not so much with God at that point. You know what God is, but you sit down and you pray with yourself, so to say. You pray and say, am I really desiring that? The first prayer. Am I really willing to love that with all my spiritual qualities? Second prayer. Am I actually not resisting it? Do I actually not only speculate with it, but am I really in earnest about it? Third prayer. Am I really honest with myself? Not honest with God, honest with myself. Am I really honest when I desire that? Or do I just fool myself and giving an appearance of it? Do I only profess to it, or is it really my most innest part, my most innest feeling of it? That's the fourth prayer. And so you go through these seven prayers always within you. Whatever you study, whatever you ponder, it must be something that we ask ourselves, is that really within us? Actually, you can combine that with Atonement and Eucharist, which says, and am I willing to lay down everything for that? Atonement and Eucharist then says, if your prayer is pure, am I willing to sacrifice everything for that? Do I actually drink the cup or do I refuse it? Am I willing really to sacrifice and give up everything that is necessary in order that this pure motive in prayer can really manifest itself. Can you see, you begin to take those various chapters, those various categories, and combine it with your pondering, and that's naturally treatment. That's treatment. So, all this helps to get the spirit of it, and not just the letter. The letter usually is very easy to get. It only needs a clear thinking, it needs disciplined thinking, and that's usually very easy compared with the spirit that has to be wedded with it. That spirit is usually not something highfalutin, the spirit, the Holy Ghost, or whatever it is. What is that? That's funny. No, the spirit of it is that I look into my consciousness, that I look into my heart, that I really analyze what is in my heart and discover what is in my heart, and then struggle with myself in order to overcome all that which seems to be going against the divine. And I have a struggle with myself, and not with something outside, with an animal magnetism or malicious malpractice or anything like that. If there is a sinless state within me, animal magnetism, malicious animal magnetism, has no chance whatsoever to manifest itself. No chance whatsoever. So, can you see that pondering starts out with that letter, as for instance we have here, the whole letter of the Christ translation, but the pondering of it is always again combined with prayer. All right, or we take life and go horizontally through it and see that from the divine standpoint, God is life, and life always wants to manifest itself. It's therefore a living power, a vital power, a dynamic power. And so I get the sense that life is constantly, spontaneously impelling itself with great power. And therefore, as a human attitude, I have to say, and I expect really something new to happen. I expect a mutation. I expect a paradigm shift. And so I'm willing to let the newness of life come into my consciousness. And then I see, and if I wouldn't do that, I would anyway lose the battle, because life is irrepressible. Life is irresistible. It would anyway break through, but it will break through suffering, and I don't like that, so I better give in. That you can think over, you see. You see how the human standpoint, those two categories of the human standpoint, have to do with our analysis of what is in ourself, and can you say an interrogation with ourselves, introspection, so to say, into ourselves, and say, do I fool the world? Do I fool myself? Or I'm honest about it? Is this really that which makes up my whole human attitude? So that the human attitude corresponds really with the divine standpoint. Or we take truth horizontally and see from the divine standpoint that Christ is really that truth power, that truth consciousness, that consciousness which knows the truth, that knows what it wants to fulfill. It knows the right idea that it wants to fulfill. And therefore I say, and that truth penetrates every detail of my life. It will come to every detail of my life and find out what is wrong, find out where is a wrong attitude, find out what has to be corrected. It is penetrating, so to say, into the last little detail and searches the heart, so that I say to myself, I better accept that truth that wants to come and rectify everything, or else that Christ just crushes me to powder. It destroys me. It is a terrific power. I always see the Christ as a bulldozer. You know, that bulldozer just comes along very slowly. Boom, boom, boom. Whatever is in the way is crushed, is crushed, is crushed. When you look what happened after the bulldozer has gone over it, everything is flat. It's crushed. All the opposition is just crushed to power. The prophets, as I said, they saw that. They constantly talked about that Christ truth that will destroy error, that will crush to power error, that will... Gosh, I don't have quite now the vocabulary here, but if you take, for instance, Zephaniah, he has a whole list of synonymous term for crushing to powder, for destroying. It's not just always the simple term of destroying. He has a wonderful a vocabulary of synonyms for that term destroying. Yeah. And as we don't like that to be crushed to powder, we jolly well are honest with ourselves and say, okay, then I have to give in. Or we can go through love and take it in the horizontal. Here we have love from the divine standpoint that says, I'm love, I'm that universal power of love. The whole universe is one universe, therefore the whole universe is engaged in solving a part of it, a detail of it. The detail has not to look after itself, the whole world is looking after the detail. The whole world is mobilized to bring about really a solution. Have you ever experienced that wonderful thing that you had a problem and then suddenly the solution came from way out in the world, from parts and from possibilities we were never thinking of, and somehow something in the universe began to change and to move, and suddenly that brings about the light breaks in and brings about the solution. So the more we open up our consciousness, you see, to the Christ idea at the point of love as being universal and not just as a detail that is concerned with just one single individual problem, that the Christ is an idea and an idea is always universal, then we open up really our consciousness that the whole universe works for us. And that happens so often, right from the other side of the globe comes an answer, comes something that just throws new light on the situation, that brings perhaps a solution, and it's quite amazing how these things happen when we really see that our consciousness stretches over oceans and continents and oceans, that our consciousness is not just in our little family and in our little house or in our little body, but that the consciousness is always of the nature of the universal idea. Then we have the idea of love as universal power, as universal engagement for a situation, which from the human standpoint shows us, and therein lies really the power of salvation. The power of salvation lies in there that I don't look for gnats, but for those big, big problems, the camels that say there are universal categories of being, and those universal categories of being, they work for me. And that shows me that it is absolutely hideous if I try to resist it, because love forces me to accept what best promotes my growth. Love is forcible. And so I give in. Or we come to soul, and we see here in soul something very beautiful. We have said that on the divine standpoint, we always see that at that point, the divinely subjective becomes divinely objective, namely, it becomes so that that divinely subjective ego or person of God translates itself to a specific situation. And in that translation process, nothing is getting lost, so that the object will reflect the same qualities as God, so that the identity of subject and object is established. That's identity. Where the subject and the object are identical, then I have the tone of soul. So I see that in that translation, the identical nature of God is being brought out. And therefore, because the identical nature of God is brought out in the human must reflect that identity, which means that everything that does not coincide with the divine, that does not is not in agreement with the divine, has to be transformed, has to be reformed, has to be exchanged. And so within myself I accept that attitude, that I'm willing that all that which is not divine is being exchanged and reformed. Which shows that if I don't let that happen, if I resist it, then I resist really soul and I begin to suffer. And I have, as a resisting attitude, suffering. Then things really begin to be painful. If we take spirit, there again we can see that from the divine standpoint, we see that God comes to men, to mortals, as spirit and bring order. So that spirit here is the ordering power and says, out of chaos I bring order. I am that power that gives to every detail its rightful place within the whole structure of being. I give the rightful place, and then everything is in the rightful place. We have a sense of order and no more of a chaotic situation. And what happens within ourselves from the human standpoint, if we accept that, then we say, all right, let it happen. Then it pushes out of my consciousness everything that is not belonging to that order. It clarifies the situation. It purifies the situation. It separates the truss. What you say, it separates the wheat from the chaff. You say that, huh? Oh, the gold, huh? It even purifies the gold of human character, as Mrs. Eddy said. We get that sense of the purifying process going on, and we know that if I resist that, then there is the battle between the two, between two opposites, and what I experience is a chemicalization, is a crisis, is a conflict, is a terrific frustration. Nothing seems to unfold anymore. Nothing seems to get into order anymore. And I have a sense of frustration. Or I take the last one, mind, and go through it horizontally. There I see the Christ mind from the divine standpoint says, I'm the one illumining mind. I'm the mind that that does manifest itself. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. It manifests itself out of itself, not through our thinking, but mind manifests itself as mind. And so our human standpoint will be that it says, that's fine. Then finally the ideas of mind will break in into our consciousness. I have an open thought. I let the light shine in. I let the light come in. And this brings me light and leads me into all light. So it leads me, it will correct what needs correcting, and I let it happen that it corrects it. It is not a painful process to have it corrected. But it is really the healing mind that I expect and accept. It's always that point where perhaps we also have to get another view on what we feel error is. I hear the divine mind says, I come correct. So correction is something very nice, something divine. It's something that the divine mind wants to do. So why should we not like it? Why should the human mind always try to defend its own errors? And why should the divine mind be ashamed of having made an error? That's usually the point why we resist the Christ idea correcting something, because we feel ashamed that we have made a mistake. Well, instead of feeling ashamed that we have made a mistake and therefore that we are not so clever as we were thinking, that we are not so good as we were thinking, and that other people see that we are not so good as they were thinking, all that humbug can be put right away by that beautiful concept here that we see. There is nothing more beautiful than to let God correct us a mistake. That's wonderful, that's a blessing, and therefore I should accept that very a correction as something positive, as something wonderful, and then I don't try to resist it. We resist the correction because it touches our personal sense and says to our personal sense, now you see, you were wrong, you were not so bright as you were thinking, you were not so good as you were thinking, you are not so good as the people were thinking you were, and now the people see that you have made a mistake and that you are not as big shot as they were thinking. Isn't it all that going on in one's mind? And that is something that is like a burden on us sometimes, that we feel, oh, I have made a mistake. Well, if I have made a mistake, that was error. Well, error is against truth, it's against God. Well, you can't take it that way, but you also can take it the way the Christ looks at it. The Christ looks at it and says, hello, wonderful, now finally you see something wonderful is going to happen, you will be freed of another error. And if we have that accepting attitude, we don't resist the correction. Or else if we resist it, we know what happens. We are just as ignorant as before. We are just as silly as before. And that is really entertaining ignorance, entertaining animal magnetism. And so we just can blame ourselves that animal magnetism has a chance within ourselves. We let it have a chance. Yes. So can you see how you can take this wonderful definition of the translation of God to man, that sevenfold synonymous term order, and if one looks at it always consistently according to the categories, you arrive at a wonderful elaboration of it. And they are not just seven terms, as it is in the book, but then you begin to reason that out and say, if I stay in the category of the Christ order and the Christ purpose of God coming to man, of the generalities being translated to the specific, and if I take in my attitudes towards it, then suddenly you have a whole story, a whole picture that is a very big picture.